dairy, no sweets. Only ripe vegetables, fresh fruit and whole wheat. I'm from the old school. My household smell like soul food, bruh. Curry falafel.
What's up, Beardos? Welcome to episode 64 of The Bearded Vegans. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes at thebeardedvegans.com, and you can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
In today's episode, we will be talking about what we've been eating, discuss the recent $52 million antitrust lawsuit settlement against the dairy industry, and then ask the question, are cameras in slaughterhouses a victory for animals? I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
Will we, though?
Probably not.
So a quick note before we begin, we're actually recording this intro after we recorded the main body of the episode, a little Twilight Zone action there, and we were originally planning to talk about Ringling Brothers Circus closing, but we talked for so long about cameras and slaughterhouses, we decided in the interest of time, we're going to save that for next week, but we do make a couple mentions of it, so we just wanted to let y'all to know what was up with that, and with that said, let's get on with the show.
Let's get the things that we do know out of the way first, and that's what we've been putting in our mouths. So Andy, what have you been eating?
Paul, I'll try and make this quick because we have a lot to talk about today. Mm-hmm. But I finally got to take a trip to Riverdale, which is in Brooklyn, and it's kind of like a fancy cheese shop. They also have things other than cheese, like, you know, crackers and spreads and fun chocolate and stuff like that. But it's kind of, I feel like I've been going to a lot of like real bougie, expensive places on the show recently, and this is like maybe the pinnacle of that.
Oh, that's so funny.
Very small little place. Paul, I've never seen such a variety of vegan cheese before.
Ooh.
And I have been to a vegan cheese store before. This place had lots of brands I had never heard of before, some that I was excited to try and hadn't been able to find yet. So it was a really cool experience. Before I get to the shopping, though, they also have a menu of cheesy goodness items that you can order. And we got this grilled ham and cheese sandwich and then a salami cheese panini press kind of sandwich, yeah, which was called the M. Night Shalami.
I hate that. No, I'm just kidding. I love it. I love it.
Whatever ham they used on their grilled ham and cheese was outstanding. It was so good. Didn't love the cheddar on that so much. And then whatever cheese they used on their M. Night Shalami was outstanding. And I wish I could, next time I go, I'm just going to make a hybrid of that sandwich because it was really fantastic. But we got a bit of a haul, picked up some Vetopian cheese, which is a cheese maker out in Portland that I think is really, really good. Got their white cheddar, got this brand I never heard of before called Bright Life, B-R-Y-T Life, which just seems to be kind of local made in New York. They had my favorite cheese of the trip, which was a smoked Gouda. And then they also had cheese from the Herbivorous Butcher.
Ooh.
Who, you know, has so much good press behind them. Like, whoever is in charge of their branding and their promotions is just knocking it out of the park because everyone talks about them. Everyone I know that's been there has said, it's amazing. It's like so good. And I'm always kind of like, how good could it really be? You know, it's like seitan meat and like, you know, vegan cheese. And not that those things can't be good, but I'm just like incredulous that it could be that good, you know?
Yeah.
And we picked up this cheese, which was not labeled, didn't have ingredients or a name or anything, just had kind of their sticker on it. And it was some kind of spicy cheese. And I thought it was fine. Like, I wasn't blown away by it, but I will be making a trip there in a couple of months. So I'm excited to try more things from the Herbivorous Butcher and get more of a definitive stance on their stuff. I'm expecting to at least like it. But
you're expecting that it will be labeled this time.
I'm hoping I'll know what I'm eating. And then I guess there's a bunch of other things. They're all on the Instagram. You can check them out. But the thing that I need to really single out, the star of the show, if you will, Paul, was that they had a little bakery case with just like four or five things in it. Mm-hmm. And there was something that looked like a donut. And I was like, is that a donut? And they're like, it's a cronut.
Ooh.
Do you know about the cronut, Paul?
The croissant donut?
Yes. So I guess they're not.
I think I maybe just guessed what that was just right now.
they're not legally allowed to call it a cronut. Like, someone else has that label under wraps, but it is the hybrid of a croissant and a donut.
Mm.
And it turns out this was from Brooklyn Whiskers Bakery. And this was a lemon pistachio cronut. And Paul.
Yes, Andy?
It's one of the best desserts I've ever had.
Dang.
It was so good. And it was filled with this like lemon custard kind of filling, which normally I wouldn't love a filling because I want the crispy flakiness of the croissant. But this filling was so good. It was so good.
Do they always have this there?
I don't know. It's my first and only time. So I hope that they do. But Brooklyn Whiskers has their own storefront in Brooklyn, so I can just go get my supply there from now on.
And maybe bring me back some. Maybe.
Maybe I will. Maybe you should come to New York sometime, Paul.
Maybe I will, Andy.
All right, Paul, that's everything that's been in my mouth of note recently.
Mm-hmm.
What's been in that beautiful mouth of yours?
Took a trip up to Boston, obviously got Veggie Galaxy. I think I took a trip up to Boston last week too. Also got Veggie Galaxy, but this time I got something different, and that was Taco Party. I believe that I've had them at a Veg Fest. It was probably the New England Veg Fest or the Worcester Veg Fest, one of those two that they were at. They were like sharing a table with, I think, Sabretooth Bakery, and I had them there. It was good. This is the first time I've been to the storefront. It's this like cute little shop. There's pictures of dogs. So if you ever bring your dog in, they take a picture with a Polaroid and put it on this wall, which is a cute thing to do.
That's adorable.
Have you had Taco Party, Andy?
I have, Paul.
And what do you think?
The first time was at the New England Veg Fest with you.
Okay. Well, that was it.
I don't think they were splitting a table with Sabretooth Vegan Bakery at that point, but when they first opened, they were kind of a split storefront between Sabretooth and Taco Party.
Yeah.
Like, it was, the whole thing was like tacos and donuts. So, but then the proprietor of Sabretooth moved across the country to work a farm sanctuary, not the farm sanctuary, but a farmed animal sanctuary, or maybe a dog sanctuary, an animal sanctuary of some kind. and so the donuts are, as far as I know, there's no longer baked goods there.
They had a few desserts. I'm not sure. Like, they had some, you know what they had? They had cannolis. I did not get them. I'm not sure if they made them there, if they got them from someplace else, though. I would guess that they got them from a different bakery.
Okay. What did you think of the food?
It was good. I got two tacos and nachos. That rhymed better in my head, and then when I said it out loud, it didn't really rhyme. But
Paul, you said it was good. That to me, it didn't seem like you were too blown away by it.
So here's the thing: I'm a hard shell taco type of boy, and these were soft shell tortillas. The filling, so I got two tacos. One was like a seitan, who I might add, the person that I was with pronounced it seitan. And I was like, thank you.
You know, there's a lot of people that pronounce it dia as well. That doesn't make it right, Paul.
All right. I got a seitan one and then a tofu one. They had like a nice variety of different, like basically all of the fake meats. They had a taco for that, but my go-tos are always the seitan and the tofu. Like, I like jackfruit, but it's not my go-to if there's other stuff. And they were both good. Like, the fillings were great. It was really just the soft shell. Like, I'm the type of person that if I ever make tacos myself, it's always you have a hard shell, you fill it up, and then you put the soft shell around it, like a little Crunchwrap Supreme type of deal. And that's like the only way that I eat tacos. And I think that is the only correct way to eat tacos.
I didn't realize just how white you are, Paul.
And that's how I always eat tacos. And like, if I ever go to Taco Bell or something, I always get the Crunchwrap Supreme. So it's like, that's what I'm used to, is like the hard shell tacos. And I'm just not as much of a fan of the soft shell tortilla. But other than that, it was really good. And the nachos were really, really good, too.
Paul, you need to get your shit together.
And put it all in a hard shell. You're absolutely correct.
Soft shell. A soft shell. is this going to be our new Gregor Gate?
I don't know. I think I think I'd be easier to be swayed about a soft shell taco than I am about pineapple pizza. Actually, to be honest, I feel like if I tried pineapple pizza at this point, I might be like, you know what, this is okay. But at this point, yeah. it's the principle of the pineapple, and I can't have it. But
it's like a prince apple.
A prince apple. So that's the only thing notable that I really went out and got. Although I did in I already told Andy about this, but in recent Paul development, I had one last hurrah last night on Monday, because I had Monday off for MLK Day. And then I have decided that I'm no longer going to be eating Beyond Meat chicken strips and Guardian chicken tenders, which has up until now been my daily routine that I eat every single day. I decided I should probably be eating less of that stuff. So I'm going healthy during the week. And then during the weekends, you'll still hear about me getting Blackbird probably. But I had one last hurrah, and one of my friends came over, and we made potato skins with the Upton's bacon. We made nachos with Daya and Beyond Meat beef crumbles and refried beans and the tofu-y soy, tofu-y sour cream. And then we took the Guardian chicken scallopini, cut it into little strips, breaded it with the Follow Your Heart vegan egg and then some breadcrumbs, and then deep fried that and dipped it in buffalo sauce. So I literally hit all of the different brands of fake meat that I've been eating up until now. I got Upton's Beyond Meat, Guardian, and one other one that I just missed. But it was like enough food for five people, and two of us ate it. And now I currently still feel sick from it last night.
But, Paul, you know, Beyond Meat would say it's not fake meat. It's real meat made from plants.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you for correcting me. And it's pronounced Beyond Meat. So yeah, I'm swearing off Guardian and Beyond Meat for the time being, till I get my stomach back in alignment. But yeah,
The listeners would be horrified to know what your regular food routines are.
Listeners, don't be afraid though. I will still be eating a block of tofu every single day.
Unseasoned in a blender.
Yep. All right.
Okay, Paul.
Yes,
okay. We got another one-star review from someone who was upset about us talking about food. So
this is for that person.
This is for that person. They may have enjoyed last week's episode with Vegan Warrior Princess Attack, where there was zero food talk.
Yeah.
We probably lost them. Anyway, let's move on into current events.
So what's going on in the world, this terrible, terrible world of ours?
So this just came across my dash very recently, and it is a piece that requires timely action on the part of listeners, so pay attention. Mm-hmm. This is an article from the Huffington Post, and we will, of course, post the link to this in our show notes, which you can find at thebeardedvegans.com. The dairy industry killed off 500,000 cows in an alleged price-fixing scheme. So from this article, there was a lawsuit filed against National Milk Producers Federation and the lawyer. It seemed to be on behalf of Compassion Over Killing. And so the article says, the suit states that cooperatives working together, a trade group led by the National Milk Producers Federation, oversaw a quote-unquote herd retirement program between 2003 and 2010. That, quote, retirement program consisted of dairy cooperatives buying out entire herds of cattle, primarily from small farms, and sending them for early slaughter. Spent dairy cows are typically slaughtered for cheap ground beef, though she couldn't speak of the fate of each cow in this program, she being the lawyer for Compassion Over Killing. So this sounds pretty horrific.
You know what I just realized, Andy? That something that just clicked right now. Because I think in another part of the article, it mentions how the reasoning that they gave for this was not to drive up milk prices, but it was to provide It's like a way for farmers to like stop farming, right? Is that what it? Voluntary
transition out of farming.
Yeah, voluntary self-help farmer-funded program that allowed dairy farmers who wanted to stop farming to exit farming altogether. So because when I originally heard the term herd retirement program, I feel like it makes it seem like they're retiring the cows. Are they actually talking about the people in that herd retirement, or is it just a deceptive way of naming something?
I think it's maybe for plausible deniability, but I'm pretty sure it's just kind of palatable phrasing for what they're going to do to the cows.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's not like they're going down to Florida and they're going to live at, you know, Boca Vista Phase 3. Like, they're actually going to be killed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much, I mean, because I believe the average dairy cow goes about 3 to 4 years before they're considered spent, and they don't have the same production, and they'll kind of go off to slaughter at that point. So I'm wondering how much sooner these cows are actually going to slaughter. Like,
yeah, because that's not that much time anyways.
A significant difference. Yeah. So anyway, so this lawsuit, it was settled. So essentially, the milk producers are able to say that they were not convicted of any wrongdoing. And so on their end, they're clean of any, you know, guilt or whatever. But there is a $52 million settlement at hand. And anybody who consumed milk, purchased milk between 2003 and the present day in certain states, and we'll link to an article that has a list of the states, you can put in your claim for this. And, you know, if you're just one person, the most you'll get is $20 or $30. But if you bought on behalf of like a school or something like that, you can get upwards of like $600. And so if you want to do that, if you're someone who drank milk in one of these states, you can go to botmilk.com, BOUGHT milk.com. And it's a very easy process. And I've only been vegan since 2007, and I resided in Massachusetts, which is one of the states included in this. So I went and signed up. I figure, give me some of that sweet, sweet dairy money. but the deadline to do so is, I believe, January 31st. So you only got a little bit of time if you're listening to this in a timely fashion to go and claim your thing.
You know what's weird about that, though, is that, and I mean, obviously, I think that good that we're taking the money away from them, but it does say that this program added an average of 59 cents per 100 pounds of milk. So it's like, how are people getting $20 or like $600? Like, people are not drinking hundreds of pounds of milk.
Emotional damage, Paul.
All right. I'll buy it. Like, if we're going to take their money, then good. But that is such an insignificant amount of money for an average consumer.
Yeah, it is interesting because it seems like that's probably a fairly minuscule addition of, you know, cents per gallon.
Yeah.
But I guess cool that the lawsuit happened. Like, what does this mean? Does this mean anything, or is this just like an interesting thing that has happened?
Well, I think the fact that they are killing off a 500,000 cows, of course, like, they would have been killed in the near future, most likely anyways, within, like you said, an average of 3 years anyways. But that's still like I feel like it's a very, I think this is significant because that number, I think, will shock people, and non-vegans included. Like, if you say like, hey, the dairy industry just killed off 50,000 cows, and the reason that they did it was like so that they could, you know, drive up prices. And I think that even non-vegans will empathize with that. And I think we can use that to kind of tap into their empathy. I think that it's a good way because people, you know, because it's something that the dairy industry did that I think at first someone would say, oh, this is someone else doing something horrible. That's a horrible thing. And then if you can kind of tie that into being like, well, you know, it's like you're also supporting this happening on a daily basis as well, you could maybe use that to kind of get them to either stop drinking as much milk or stop drinking milk completely.
Yeah, I mean, I think it could definitely be used to sort of show how horrible the dairy industry is. Obviously, people should not consume cow's milk because it doesn't belong to them, and it's not ethically or morally right to use animals to our own means. But I do think this type of news does seem like the kind of thing that could like really like shock someone and be like, wait, what? Like, I thought cows weren't hurt for dairy. And obviously we have to educate people on what, you know, cows are hurt for dairy. We do kill them, et cetera. And they're exploited and abused. Even in a nice situation, it's not good for a cow. If it's like someone just chilling in your backyard, a cow chilling in your backyard, you're still taking milk that was meant for their child. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's still kind of like, wow, they killed 500,000 cows just so they could drive up prices and get more money out of me, their loyal consumer. Maybe this is an industry that I don't want to be supporting. And I guess perhaps it could be considered just another sign of the times. You know, we covered how there was that big dairy bailout that happened and milk consumption's going down. And like all of these things feel like an industry that's kind of scrambling to maintain a foothold in a market that is disappearing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree completely. Which I feel like is a good that's going to be the theme that ties everything together tonight. The things that are going out of style.
I was just thinking that, Paul. All right, so are we done with this story?
Yeah. I mean, I'm interested. We didn't really given any ideas about if this is a good, it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing. But if this is some, like how this will affect vegans, how this will affect non-vegans. I mean, maybe nothing will happen. But at the very least, I think it will get some people to turn their head and say, wait a second, maybe this isn't a good industry that I'm supporting. So, I mean, I guess that's all I really have to say about it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's going to be a good talking point. It's a good tool in our belt when we're discussing these things with people. And I think that this is, you know, we kind of talk about how it's good to selectively post vegan stuff on your Facebook wall. Like, you don't want to be that person that's just flooding your wall with all this vegan propaganda all the time. This is something that you can post and be like, hey, friends who drink milk or drank milk, you know, between 2003 and now. I've seen a lot of people posting it like, if you're a milk, you know, if you eat meat or if you're vegetarian or if you're a new vegan. And I'm like, I mean, like 13 years ago is the cutoff. So it's like, that's not even like if you're a new vegan, like I'll be 10 years vegan at the end of this year. So it's like, even if you've been vegan for 5 to 10 years, like you can still get in on this. Even if you went vegan 2 days ago, you can still get in on this, or 12 years ago, like whatever it is. So I think it's a good thing to post because you'd be like, hey, do you drink milk? You should get money out of this industry. And then that has people going, why am I getting money? And they're looking at the information at Bought Milk. That's like, this is what the lawsuit's about. And it has them sort of engaged and actively participating in this whole thing. So mm-hmm. I think that this is like, would be a really prime example of a good thing to post to slip into your normal feed.
Yeah. So I think that's all there is to be said about it. Let's move on into the next.
Yeah. Go to Bought Milk, make your claim. So, you know, Paul, sometimes there's weeks where it's like we're really struggling to figure out what to talk about. And then sometimes there's weeks like this where things just sort of fall in your lap. Coming from an article at Medium.com, France passes historic bill ordering cameras in all slaughterhouses. Paul, this is actually not the first country to do this. Israel passed a similar measure earlier in 2016. But the French National Assembly voted 28-4 to pass a measure to install mandatory cameras in all slaughterhouses by 2018. Don't know all the ins and outs of the French lawmaking system, but I guess it hasn't officially been debated and voted into law yet. But before that happens, there's going to be an experimentation phase where they put cameras in 267 slaughterhouses. And I guess there's about 1,000 slaughterhouses in France in general. So about 1 in 4 are going to get these cameras. And reading from the article, stakeholders, including animal protection professionals, slaughterhouse management, and government officials might have, quote, limited access to footage to determine how to craft the final legislation. Animal protection advocates are preparing for an uphill battle ahead of debate in Parliament against the dominant agriculture lobby, a major economic sector in France. And then there's actually kind of an update at the bottom of the article that says that it was determined that only veterinary officials and slaughterhouse management would have access to the footage. And I can't find anything clarifying if that's like for this trial period or if this is like what the legislation is going to be. But I'm assuming it's just for the trial period. So let's base our discussion off of that.
Yeah, I've two things right away to say. First thing, I was kind of distraught at the phrase, they might have limited access to the footage. I feel like that is very, it's like a very bleak outlook about what they're actually going to be able to obtain if they, you might have limited access to it.
But like, that could also mean that no one will have any access.
Yeah, exactly. You might, but you might not. And then the other thing was, it seems like this, because at first I was like, wow, 267 slaughterhouses. That's a lot of slaughterhouses for like a trial period. Like I was like, wow, that's a, you said it was about a fourth. That's pretty good, I think, for the trial period, these like test periods, and it's happening. It has to happen, what, before May? So it's going to happen like very, very quickly. Whereas, you know, most of these things take like a few years to implement. But then I feel like part of the article is insinuating that the reason for this, quote, like experimentation phase is just so that like the and this even says it's like the only people that are going to, one of the two people that are going to be able to look at this is the slaughterhouse management. And I feel like the article is insinuating that the reason for this experimentation phase is just so that the management can make sure that nothing looks bad before they finally implement it. Did you kind of get that
yeah,
picture?
It seems like it passed. And actually the article says that 85% of French citizens are in favor of putting cameras in slaughterhouses. So it seems like it passed with a lot of public support, but there is of course a huge agriculture lobby there. Mm-hmm. And so this is kind of something we see in the US as well, where something passes, but then doesn't have to be implemented for a long time. This is a shorter window than I'm normally expecting of these types of things, based on the US at least. And it's like a time to whittle away things and weasel out of things and figure workarounds for all that stuff. And so this kind of feels like the agriculture lobby is kind of wielding its power to do as much as it can to chip away at the potential efficacy of adding these cameras and just sort of whittling it away. And that was sort of the impression that I got.
Yeah. I think either way, it's they're kind of, they're trying to make this less effective than it could possibly be. But overall, I mean, and again, it is very unclear about, like you were pointing out, about ultimately if this does pass, who would have access to this? Because I honestly feel like, and jumping right into this right now, I know you're going to ask the question, I honestly feel like if anybody had access to this footage, that would be extremely detrimental to like the meat industry.
Yeah, I think we can definitely say pretty conclusively that when people see footage of what happens to animals in the agriculture system, slaughterhouse or even in feedlots or whatever, that it does not increase the favorability of that industry. So yeah. I think it's pretty clear that it's easily very bad, or at least bad. It's negative for the industry, for the animal agriculture industry, to have footage like this more readily available.
And you know, then it's like, and even on top of just the average person saying like, huh, I'm curious about what's going on here. I mean, if this becomes accessible to a lot of different people, then, you know, I feel like animal advocate groups can then use this footage, that it would be much easier for them to obtain footage from slaughterhouses. They won't need to like sneak into slaughterhouses anymore. It's literally just going to be all there.
Now, Paul, though,
yes,
counterpoint to this, something that is often brought up whenever there is an undercover investigation and the footage is finally released, the, you know, whatever the facility is, will just say, well, they selectively edited a few moments. And this could be their insurance to say, you know, oh, well, it's not that bad, so let's just show you the full video, and you're not just getting a few like really bad edited parts.
But you could
still,
so it's
like insurance for the slaughter industry against videos. If obviously we know what they're saying is wrong, like this abuse is inherent in raising and killing animals for food, but like it should be a positive for their industry. It should be like, oh, finally we can show you the truth about what happens and we won't get smeared by those horrible animal rights activists.
I mean, but then you could literally just make a supercut of the animals being killed, which they are all being killed at the end anyways. And like, I feel like even in the most humane ways, that it's still terrible to see someone losing their life. So it's like, you know, you could still say like, it's like, yeah, maybe these extreme things are only happening once every so often, but it's like literally animals are being killed every single day on a daily basis. And you could just say like, boom, 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 boom. You could show all these, like just a quick clip of all these things and be like, yeah, you want to say that there's nothing cruel is happening like in here, you know?
Yeah. And I absolutely agree with that. I guess I'm saying that the industry, if they were to put themselves up to a magnifying glass, you know, they would have to admit that their standard reply of, oh, that's selectively edited footage, is not going to hold up to scrutiny. Like, they should be like, oh yeah, that's great. Give us an opportunity to show you what's really happening anytime one of these undercover investigations happens. Obviously, the fact that they are so opposed to this shows that they're lying, and hopefully the general public can put two and two together.
And even on top of that, I think in slaughterhouses, even the most, quote, humane practices are still just unpleasant to look at. Like, do you remember the movie that we watched, the one that was put on by Whole Foods, where it went to a bunch of the different, it went to a bunch of the different factory farms?
Yeah.
And remember there was the one where the manager or whoever, the owner, someone that was running it was like encouraged people to come in and view it. And I feel like I had the impression, I think you may have too, that like this person, he thought that people were going to come and be like, oh, look how great these animals are treated. But it was like still super unpleasant to watch all these animals, like how they were treated, even though this was the humane way of treating them. So I feel like even if it's like good practices, it is still just an unpleasant thing as a whole. There's no way, I don't think you could make this look like something pleasant. So if someone was just viewing this, they'd be like, oh, this is like, at the very least, I think it would be like, this makes me slightly uncomfortable. And at the most, they'd be like, wow, this is terrible. And I need to stop participating in this. Like, I don't think there's any way that the animal agricultural business could be like, no, look at this video. Like, look at how much they're enjoying themselves. You know, it's like they don't have any, because they don't have anything like that, because there is nothing like that.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I agree with you, Paul. It feels like we're disagreeing, but I totally agree with you that it just shows that the industry has no defense of what they do.
Yeah.
And the film you're referencing was At the Fork. And yeah, they even showed the farmers that let their pigs roam free and all of what would be considered above and beyond the best practices at like Whole Foods. And still it was disturbing to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously we're biased, but it's like, we're biased, but I think if it was just a run of the mill factory farm, I think most people would find that unpleasant.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. The defense that the lobby did bring up is that this bill should not go forward out of respect for the workers. And that made me scratch my head. Like, what the, like, Paul, do you have any inkling as to how it's bad for workers to have footage of them working? Now, obviously, you know, it's like if someone's an employee at McDonald's and there's footage of them and they're like leaning against the counter when they should be sweeping, and like that sucks. Like, that's, capitalism is shitty. But like, it's hard to imagine why the industry would argue, because it's like, don't employers want footage of their employees doing bad things so they can fire them, so that they can find employees that are doing the right thing? You know, I'm talking about in terms of, you know, your standard job. So wouldn't that apply here as well? Like, what possible benefit is there to the workers that would also be an interest of the agriculture lobby?
Yeah, no, I think that's just them grasping at straws, because I mean, most, you know, most places have security cameras anyways. And obviously this is for a completely different purpose, but like any employer, like at McDonald's or something like that, that has security cameras, could easily just look at them and be like, you weren't doing your job. You weren't doing your job. You know, it's like they can still use them for those purposes.
Paul, it's almost as if the animal agriculture industry doesn't care how the animals are treated.
I think you might be onto something.
So the article kind of goes further into what kind of penalties would be put in place for violating. So and sort of what changes would happen. And so just throw this in real quick, because this would be potentially negative for the workers if they get busted, because they'll get fines and stuff. The article says the new law includes an independent commission, a national slaughterhouse ethics committee, and comes loaded with stiff penalties for animal cruelty violations, 6 to 12 months of prison, and fines from $8,000 to $21,000.
Is this for the workers or for like the management?
I would guess that would be the workers. Like, it always comes down on the workers. That's what we always see when there's undercover investigations. If it does lead to a prosecution and a conviction, you know, it's some poor, you know, low-level worker of color that is getting thrown under the bus to protect the upper management for systemic problems, and they can just say it was a few bad apples.
Yeah. Well, that kind of sucks.
Yeah. So like that, but it's like, there's no way the lobby, like the higher ups, really care about that kind of thing. To them, that's good. That's like, oh, you can just blame it on these small workers and not have to change anything.
Yeah.
So, which I guess brings me to me, what was the biggest question that comes out of this, which is this good or bad for animals? You know, at first I'm like, oh, this is cool. People are going to see what's going on. And that, of course, means this is implemented in a way that like the public has access to live streaming or some way to actually see it, not just like a veterinarian or a slaughterhouse manager, you know, but like in its best form, one that isn't sort of hindered by what we seem to be seeing here. Is it good? Because, okay, good for people to see what's going on. They can make an informed decision. But does it also send a message that there's a right way to kill animals? And as long as we have cameras in place to make sure that those few bad apples don't do horrible things, and if they do, we can catch them and find them and put them in prison and then continue to kill animals in a nice way. Is it really just going to kind of reinforce our, you know, the general public's current views on animals, which is, oh, yeah, there's a nice way to kill animals?
I do not think that, actually. I think that this is a good thing. I think that if someone's going to have that view that, like, there's a good way to kill animals, the only thing that could possibly happen is that that view would be questioned by viewing these things. Because, again, I think most people that have that are buying humanely raised meat and stuff like that, they're not looking at videos of what humanely raised meat is. They're not looking at videos of what the standard practice of slaughterhouses are. And if they are looking at videos of humanely raised meat, it's probably, you know, like one of the few of these businesses, like at the fork, that are having their cows roam in like hundreds of acres and stuff like that. It's probably not what the standard practice of like a humane meat like factory is. But regardless, I think I think what's more likely to happen is that someone that has that viewpoint of like, oh, I'm just going to buy humane meat, is going to realize that there is no way to buy humane meat because it doesn't actually exist. I think that that's going to happen much more frequently than someone saying like, oh, like, Now I know that like I'm just going to buy humane meat and now I feel good about that. Because I think that, like I said, most of these people probably haven't watched this kind of stuff anyways. And I think just seeing it and realizing and watching like the animal die, is hopeful. I would think would send the message like, oh, well, this happens in my, you know, in my humane productions that I'm buying from, like they're still dying at the end. Like I still have to watch this animal die. And I think that that's what's going to change people. And that's more likely to happen than them digging in their heels about humane meat. Like I can't see that happening as much.
Well, Paul, yes, I think it would be possible to take the position that it is one, probably better that cameras are in the slaughterhouses than not, but that it also has the potential to reinforce that kind of humane meat myth. I think, as you said, a lot of people haven't seen this footage. I don't expect that people will go out of their way to see this footage once it becomes available, if it becomes available, streaming or otherwise. And I think a lot of people are just going to say, okay, good, that's the government doing its job. I remember doing outreach and having so many people say, isn't there government regulations against this? when they see footage of what happens to animals in agriculture facilities. And so people just sort of assume that there's regulations. So if they just see a headline in passing that's like, hey, there's now going to be cameras in slaughterhouses, like, okay, good. The government's doing its job that I thought it was doing all along anyway. And it just sort of continues to lull people into a false sense of security that, okay, yeah, now they're being watched. So now we really know that things are going according to plan and things are being done well.
But I think that what's going to happen, though, is that even if people, and you're right, most people aren't going to go out of their way to watch this stuff. But I think that what will happen is if this is much more easily accessible to anyone, is that you are going to see an influx of these videos posted on the internet, posted on Facebook, posted on Instagram, posted on like news stories and stuff like that. And I think that's what's going to expose people that wouldn't otherwise go out of their way to actually see it. Is I think it's just going to become so much more easily accessible that you're just going to, it's going to be posted around the internet more so than it is now.
Paul, you know, it would actually be kind of a really, I think, genius implementation of this.
What's that?
If there was, in fact, if it was to just be live streaming video of what's happening in the slaughterhouses, if activists had projectors like we saw in Racing Extinction, like really powerful projectors, and they were just projecting the live stream on the outside of the slaughterhouse. Like, obviously, it would have to be one that's in like a highly, you know, a dense area where people are walking by, you know, which there are in like New York City. And if that was being projected and it was like, you know, there was like text, it was like, this is going on inside right now. Like, things like that could be a pretty effective way of implementing this type of footage.
Yeah, you just to get one of those projectors, you just need that Elon Musk money. but no, that would be a genius idea. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. That would be, or you know, it wouldn't, I guess it wouldn't even need to be done at the slaughterhouse. Like, it could be in a downtown area that's like, you know, in the same town or something. It's like, hey, this is happening right now, 3 miles away, or you know, whatever it might be.
Would that be legal?
Probably not.
Like, I don't think you could just show like real gruesome stuff. I mean, I think it's a great idea. I would want to do that, but I'm just wondering if that's even legal.
I'm trying to think, cause I know people that just go around, you know, there's those vests that people have that, have TV screens on them and they just play like Earthlings and they walk around areas. And as far as I know, it's legal. So,
It would be very strange to be like with your idea, which this would be amazing. I think if you could project it on the actual slaughterhouse, it would be very bizarre if it was illegal. Like if that was illegal, because it's like, hey, this is what's literally going on feet away from where you're standing right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It could be a potentially really interesting way to implement that footage.
Yeah.
And you know, and again, that's just kind of like, there's so many seemingly there's a lot of obstacles and barriers to actually getting this footage out to people, but it would mean that in theory people wouldn't have to sort of go undercover for, you know, 6 months to several years and you know, inflict these sort of emotional like PTSD and stress and damage that undercover investigators have to go through in order to obtain this footage.
Yeah.
You know, like that's, I see that as a positive. Like that's just sort of, okay, we have this readily available stream of footage that we can continue to show. And then when people say, oh, that footage is outdated, you know, we can always have up to date footage like right away to show people. I think that would definitely be a positive.
Yeah. No, I think so.
So Paul, thinking about the whole workers and sort of the agriculture lobby's justification saying that it would be better for workers to not have the cameras, I did find an article at One Green Planet, and they kind of take the opposite position, and they say, quote, "This is more than just a victory for animals in France. It is a victory for slaughterhouse workers, too, who are routinely exploited by the animal agriculture industry." And at first, it felt like that was kind of going to be a throwaway line just to appeal to a wider set of interests. And then they kind of do go on to talk about how, you know, in more detail about how workers are exploited. But would this just be footage of workers getting exploited? Like, so much of the effects of workers being exploited is them, like, being forced to work long hours and getting repetitive stress injuries. That's, like, the number one thing. And those aren't things that really are very flashy on a camera. Like a repetitive stress injury, that's not really something you're going to see on a camera. And I guess you could have footage of one worker in one place for 15 hours straight, and that would be horrible. But do you think this is actually good for workers to have the cameras in there?
I mean, I think that it might be good for them because then they have that as evidence. You know, it's like, Even if it's not flashy for outsiders, it's like if one worker needed to like file a claim against the company, they would then have the evidence, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess that's in that sense it's good. Like you said, it's not going to be some super flashy thing where people are outraged about these things. Although you could make, you know, you could just say like, hey, we've combed through this video. This person was working for 15 hours. So it's like, you know, I guess it's good in that sense, but. I think it could possibly be good for them in the sense, like I said, that it would verify these claims because they would literally have video evidence of it.
Yeah. And again, like it seems like the industry should be for it because then if these things aren't happening, then they can prove that they're not happening. But again, they're obviously trying to say that it's bad for workers.
Yep.
But, you know, I mean, it's obviously not the same thing, but it makes me think about in the U.S., there's a big push for cameras on police officers. And, you know, there's all sorts of issues of like when something bad does happen, all of a sudden the footage is missing or they forgot to hit record or, you know, there is damage to the footage. And are we just going to see like the same stuff happening with this? Like if something, obviously the standard footage will look bad, but if something like egregiously bad happens, you know, how easy will it be for management to just, oh, we erased the tape or we lost that memory card. You know, it feels like unless it's live streaming, it seems like there's so much potential for things to go wrong.
But even if it's not live streaming, if you have cameras in 1,000 slaughterhouses that are running all the time, it's like the chances that all of these bad things, all the real bad things, the chances that they're going to be able to cover all of them up, I feel like are pretty slim.
That's true. That is true. Like I'm just kind of imagining a site that has like a split screen with like 50 slaughterhouses that a website someone can go to and just see what's happening like right this second.
I doubt it's going to be live stream. I feel like that would, that would be ideal, but that would just, you know, that would be a whole big process that they probably don't want to, that wouldn't have enough benefit for the people making this law to have them implement that.
Yeah. So, but then it's like, okay, is this all just kind of recorded and it goes to an archive that people can access?
Like, that's what I would guess. That's what I would guess. Which I still think is okay. You know, it's like get some unpaid interns to comb through all that, hours and hours of footage.
Yeah. It's I don't know. I guess like ultimately where I fall is I think it's better than not to have the cameras. I think that there's a lot more potential upside than downside, but I also think it's important for us as vegan advocates to still let people know that this doesn't mean the animals are all of a sudden treated well inside of a slaughterhouse. And also I think that the slaughterhouse is kind of the most obvious place for these cameras, but it sort of also says bad things happen to animals only in slaughterhouses. It doesn't talk about dairy operations or like egg laying operations, you know? I'm wondering if there should be a push. Like obviously that's way less eventful, just some chickens crammed in a cage, but it makes me wonder, like, do you think that it's kind of saying, hey, only bad stuff happens in slaughterhouses, that's why there's cameras there?
You turn this into a single issue campaign, Andy? I mean, I think that it could possibly lead to that. It would probably be much, if this passes, I would guess it would be much easier to pass something like that and be like, hey, now that this precedent has been set, it's like, this is the standard. You have to meet these standards, and now we're going to go to this other agricultural industry and be like, hey, you have to meet these standards too. So I feel like it would be much easier to pass something like that afterwards.
Maybe France could pass a law that says they're not allowed to import any animal products that come from facilities that don't have cameras.
I doubt that would happen.
Hey, I mean, that's what happened in Massachusetts.
It's, yeah,
you know,
it's
like
one thing,
sort
though,
of backdoor situation.
I think it's one thing to talk about like crossing states and another thing to talk about crossing continents.
It's not continents if you're just like France to Germany.
Yeah, but it might be like France to the U.S., U.S. to France, I mean.
Yeah. Well, there are importation laws about like safety things.
Yeah. All right, get on that, animal advocates of France.
That's how they can wield their power. All right, I think we're going to leave off the discussion there. Of course, we want to know what all of you beardos out there think about the whole cameras in slaughterhouses issue. So if you want to do that, you can drop us a line at thebeardedvegans@gmail.com or get in touch with us at our Facebook or Instagram page. I assume you know how to find those. And of course, there's always thebeardedvegans.com. And be sure to tune in to the podcast next week. We're going to be talking about Ringling Brothers circus closing and what that means for animals, what that means for vegan activism moving forward. Should be a really interesting discussion.
So, Andy, what do you have coming up in the future?
This weekend, January 29th, I'll be at a vegan pop-up market presented by the New Jersey Veg Fest in Morristown, New Jersey. And then the weekend after that, not selling anything, but I will be a judge at the Philly Chili Bowl competition in Philadelphia, judging Sick. From 21 chilies to decide who is the best and the most unique.
How many chilies, Andy?
21 chilies.
That's a lot of chilies.
A lot of chilies. How many willies do you think?
Oh, just one willie, because I'll be there. I'll hopefully be there.
And speaking of willies, I will then be going out to Phoenix, Arizona, February 25th with the PHX Vegan Food Fest. And then March 26th, I'll be at the Vegan Street Fair in Los Angeles, California. You can go to CompassionCo.com for all the links and details on those events. Come find me behind the Compassion Company table.
I'm still trying to figure out why you just said speaking of willies.
Because willies are on my van.
Oh. Nice.
Throwback.
Yeah. I think that's all we got to say, right?
Yeah. I can't wait. Paul, I cannot wait to talk to you about circus next week.
Yes.
I think we're going to have a very fruitful discussion.
I think so, too. That we're not going to have right now at all, but next week.
Teaser.
All right. I think that's it. I only got one thing left to say. We are the Bearded Vegans signing off.
Paul, break it down for us. What is that per gallon?
Oh, Jesus Christ, Andy. Like
5.9 cents?
Wait, what? Are you trying to convert pounds to gallons?
Oh, pounds. All right. No. I can tell you. I know this, Paul.
Yeah?
1 gallon of water is like 5 pounds.
Yeah, but they're different liquids, so I don't think we could.
God, okay. This is riveting listening. I'm going to edit this out. Anyway. Does this mean anything, or is this just like an interesting thing that has happened?
Sorry, I'm Googling how many gallons of milk does it take to total up to 100 pounds? It is 11 gallons.
Oh, okay.
So that's not
still
as
not that much, though.
No, but that's more than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be like 100, you know, I thought it was going to be like 50 gallons of milk. And that's like, how many gallons are people buying? But yeah, no, anyways. I think in today's episode, we will be talking about what we've been eating, discuss a news item, and then jump into two mate. Fuck. In today's episode, we'll be talking about what we've been eating, discuss a news item, and then jump into a major recent development, a bill mandating cameras in French slaughterhouses. Are they good for animals? Fuck! Oh, no, I guess cameras are more than one thing. I guess that
yeah,
worked.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Maybe we should just say, we will be asking the question, are cameras in slaughterhouses good for animals?
In today's episode, we will be talking about what we've been eating, discuss a news item, and then ask the question, are cameras...
Let's type it out. A national slaughterhouse... I can't talk.